Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Waterford, Michigan, and earned a BA degree in political science from the University of Michigan. For 20 years, she was a spokesperson for various automobile manufacturers. In 1998, she founded Minds Program, Inc., Mental Illness Needs Discussion Sessions, whose mission is to educate the community about mental health issues. Her name, Heather Irish, and we're honored to have her as our guest. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Heather Irish, the founder and president of Minds Program, Inc., Mental Illness Needs Discussion Sessions. Heather, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Jack.
Can we start by talking about your parents and your childhood?
Oh, gosh. Good childhood, great family. Moved around a lot. And just, you know, came from a family that liked to laugh and we're kind of nerds, okay? So we're a fun group, though.
What's the biggest thing you learned from Mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Dad?
Oh, biggest thing I learned from Mom is that anything's possible. And I know we're taking your tagline here, but truly, she said anything's possible. But if you want to change something, you have to be part of the change.
And from Dad?
And from Dad, how to sell houses and make money off of them.
1981, you become a spokesperson at 17.
Right.
For the automobile manufacturers. A very glamorous life.
Right.
Tell us about that glamorous chapter of your life.
It was glamorous. And in the early 80s, it really was glamorous. But I'll tell you, it was interesting because when I was hired, I was told that you better know as much about the car as someone who built the car. So it was just starting to change. The industry was starting to change as far as auto show models or auto show narrators. And so we were the first group that came in and had to know about a six-cylinder engine versus a four-cylinder engine or a horizontally opposed engine opposed to a, you know, a V-shaped engine. And so it was interesting. We had to really know our stuff.
You were in Detroit Auto Show, New York City, Chicago, L.A., all over the country. Was there one or two experiences that you look back and say, wow?
You know, a lot of them. It really gave me a good skill set for what I'm doing now. And the fact that when we talk about automobiles, you can make an automobile sound really interesting by the way you tell your story, or you can make it sound really boring by using a monotone voice or by not having any interest or passion about what you're doing. So it's really similar to what I do now of taking hard to understand information and making it easy to understand and interesting to understand, interesting to learn about.
You had this glamorous life at a very young age. Where, Heather, did you ever get the confidence?
Oh, I think that was ingrained in my family. I think that is part of our DNA in our family. The women in my family are very, very strong women.
Many people have this great fear of public speaking.
Right. Don't have it.
Okay. Talk to us about overcoming this fear and becoming a great public speaker.
There's a couple of things to becoming a great public speaker. First of all, you need to know what you're talking about. You need to know your subject matter. Know your subject matter inside and out. Backwards, forwards, I mean, literally, know it, sleep it, breathe it, live it. And then understand that when you're up there talking, that you need to be passionate about what you're talking about, because if you're not passionate, your audience isn't going to be passionate. And to also engage your audience as much as possible so that it's not just a didactic speech that you're giving. You know, that's kind of boring for people.
For 20 years, you were spokesperson for Lexus, Infiniti, Subaru. Lexus was a tremendous success right out of the chute.
Right.
It came out of nowhere. And boy, people just couldn't buy them fast enough.
Right.
Why and how did they do that?
Well, Lexus did it, and they were brilliant. Because, first of all, they did the on-time delivery with their parts. So they didn't have the assembly line. So the Japanese automakers switched it, and they started doing the on-time delivery. So they didn't have a stockpile of the parts there. They could make it and get it out there cheaper and faster and better. So they didn't have as many glitches in it as using the assembly line format. But they also really listened to the customer. And that was the first time I had seen that automobile manufacturers were truly listening and involving and doing something when they heard customers' feedback.
You got a political science degree from University of Michigan, but then at age 30, you decided to go to Loyola University, Chicago,
right,
to get a law degree.
Right.
Why?
Because I had two passions. I knew that I was good at a couple of things. I knew that I was good at public speaking. I knew that I was good. I had passion for mental health issues, and I had a passion for children. And so I wanted to go to law school to become an advocate for the mentally ill.
And why did you, after 20 years, you decided to end this glorious chapter as a spokesperson?
Right.
Why?
You know, people grow up and people change, and they need to. It was time for a new chapter in the book called The Heather Irish, The Life of Heather Irish, and it was a new chapter. And it turned out to be an amazing chapter. And starting the minds, I went to law school to be an advocate for the mentally ill. And as I was in law school, I realized I felt like I was hiding out in law school. I really wanted to be out there on the streets, front row, boots on the ground, and really getting the message out that there's help available for these mental health problems and that it's okay to ask for help. And people didn't know this, and they really, really needed this information, and nobody was doing it.
We're talking to Heather Irish. When we come back, we'll ask Heather about her grandmother and how her grandmother shaped Heather's vocation in life. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Heather Irish, president of Minds. Heather, your grandmother Doris.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about Doris.
Well, I love my grandma Doris. And my grandma Doris was absolutely beautiful. She looked like Elizabeth Taylor. She and my grandpa were the jitterbug king and queen of Southeast Michigan and the waltz king and queen of Southeast Michigan. And she was my Girl Scout leader. And she was funny and she was kind. But she also had a mental health problem. And she had a very serious mental health problem. So at that time, when her symptoms started to present, there wasn't a lot known about mental illnesses. And so she was in and out of Clinton Valley Hospital, and she'd get better, and then she'd come home, and she would be better. But over time, I saw my family get torn apart by this. And I was lucky, Jack, because my mother said, "She's sick, not bad." And a lot of family just didn't know how to deal with the fact of how grandma was acting. And, you know, we in America, we think, you know, hey, this is pull yourself up by the bootstraps, snap out of it. So if someone's acting irrationally, we think they're doing it on purpose. Whereas someone who has a severe mental health problem, she had no control over what her brain was telling her. And it was a problem. And so I saw how it tore my family apart. And I studied everything I could about mental illnesses for years and years and years. And as you talked about, went to law school to become an advocate for the mentally ill. I knew that we were a smart family. And if we were a smart family, how come we didn't know how to help grandma? So more needed to be done.
Weren't you embarrassed by her?
You know what? That's a really interesting question. Love trumps embarrassment. And I loved my grandma. It didn't matter. No, I was never embarrassed by her. I can honestly tell you I was never, ever embarrassed by her. The neighborhood that she lived in, people knew it was my grandmother. They knew the family. And actually, a lot of people in the neighborhood helped her. She became a homeless person and would walk the streets. And if she, you know, so the neighborhood restaurant would buy her food and, you know, give her coffee and if she needed help. I mean, so a lot of people helped her out. I was never embarrassed by her.
1998, you decide to start a program entitled MINDS, M-I-N-D-S, Program Inc. Tell us about MINDS.
MINDS came about because I said, I went to a event over at Temple Bethel. And the event was billed, it was amazing that I saw this. I was reading the newspaper one night, and they said, come hear this great speaker at Temple Bethel, because she was going to talk about her recovery from schizophrenia. And my grandmother was diagnosed with schizophrenia. And I thought, oh my God, how can this really be happening? There's a cure. So I went to the meeting at Temple Bethel, and it was packed, absolutely packed. Standing room only. And what I saw there, Jack, was a panel of doctors who were congratulating. This is my perception, okay? Others can argue who were there. But my perception was that the doctors were patting themselves on the back about how this is so great what they've done. But they weren't telling the public about the new breakthroughs that had happened with understanding how the brain works and understanding how to treat mental health issues. And so I got up and I asked them. I raised my hand and I said, this is all well and great, but why aren't you doing more? And nobody could answer it. And everyone was silent. And I ended up leaving because I was embarrassed. At that point, I was embarrassed because I had said something that obviously had irked some people and nobody was responding to me. And as I was walking out of Temple Bethel, I thought to myself, well, Heather, what are you doing about it? And that was the moment that I said, I'm going to start this program.
And God brought you an angel named Lee Grubb.
He did bring me an angel named Lee Grubb, and he was a businessman in Detroit. He passed away a couple of years ago, and I went to him. I knew him from other business dealings that we had had together, and I went to him and I said, I have this idea, Lee. Will you give me $5,000 to start this program? And he said, yeah, I will. And I thought, well, okay, here we go. Will you sit on my board of directors? And he said, yes, I will. And I said, well, okay, will you give me office space? And he said, yes, I will. And so it was great because that was the founding, that was the beginning of the MINDS program. And it was the Thomas Group that was in Troy, Michigan, and they gave us our first office space for a couple of years. And we're forever grateful to Lee Grubb.
If you want to learn more, www.mindsprogram.org. Heather, it's one thing to say, okay, I'm going to start this program, and I've got $5,000 and a desk and a chair. But how did you ever develop the curricula and the protocol?
Yeah, and that's what's amazing because, Jack, you know as a business person that most startups fail. So the odds were really against us. But I didn't know the odds were against us. And so ignorance was bliss. And I went out, and so I knew a couple. I had enough connections in the area that I was able to start working in schools. And our first grant, so we got set up as a 501c3, and our first grant was from the Isaiah Thomas Foundation. And they gave us $5,000. And then I met another person who was with Metro Health Foundation, and they gave us $25,000. And so then we got more schools, and it just started to snowball. Jack, it was so needed, and we really just, we got busy. I mean, it just took off. It really did. And the kids loved it. We have always done research on making sure the kids get the right message because we want to make sure that we're a best practices organization, which we are, and make sure that we're doing what we say we're doing. So if we're saying we're helping kids with understand mental health issues and how to get help if it's ever needed, then we want to prove that that's what we're doing. And we've done that for 16 years. We've done outcome studies to make sure that we're doing the right thing. But the kids have always come back and said, you know, such things as, thank you for teaching the class that I'm not a freak. And kids would say, I always wanted to know about this, but the adults would never tell us the truth. And I'll tell you something else, that every single class that we have ever gone into for 16 years, we always ask the class, how many of you have ever known someone who completed suicide, talked about completing suicide, or did complete suicide? And in every single class, no matter if it's in Detroit, Flint, Pontiac, Birmingham, Bloomfield Hills, Troy, or a little teeny tiny farming town in the west side of the state, over half the class raises their hand to that question. So these are issues that kids are already dealing with. We have to, it's incumbent on us to teach the kids the truth that science understands the brain and knows how to treat these illnesses.
And over these last 16 years, MINDS has reached 15,000 students, Southeast Michigan. Every year, you will teach 200 courses this year in 25 high schools.
Right.
Describe, Heather, the curricula as it exists today.
Sure. So, you know, it was really interesting because the more you get to know me, you'll understand that I'm fearless when it comes to being a mental health advocate. So one of the first things that I did, well, when I started MINDS, it was right about the time that the Surgeon General, David Satcher, came out with reports, and they were groundbreaking reports, and they just happened to be about suicide prevention and mental illnesses. And so I called the Surgeon General, and I didn't know the Surgeon General, but I cold called him and said, you need to know what we're doing here in Michigan, because it's exactly the three things that you said for states to do, because we're already doing it. And so I got mentored by the Surgeon General's office, by Colonel David Litz for years, was mentored by him. And that was how we set up curriculum, and we started to work with the University of Michigan. I cold called the University of Michigan and said, you know, I need some help with this. And so they've helped us with a lot of stuff too. But that's the curriculum is, we talk about depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, addiction, and suicide prevention.
And Heather, what's the cost of the program to the high school?
Right now, for 1 to 3 presentations, and we go right into your class, so it's not an auditorium-style presentation. It's in the classroom. We will take the entire length of your class, and it is $300 for 1 to 3 presentations. It's $400 for 4 to 5 presentations.
If you recall, there was this world-class automotive spokesperson, Ricardo Montalbán, Chrysler Cordova. Well, we're speaking to the female world-class version of that, Heather Irish. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Heather Irish, who is shining a light on mental health. 200 presentations this year. Don't some kids, Heather, laugh to hide their uncomfortableness during the program?
Sure they do. Sure. And we know that. So it's one of the things that when I train presenters to give this presentation is that we talk about that. I say, let them laugh. Let them. It's okay, because we know that that's a way that they're letting off some anxiety about the issue that we're talking about. But I've got to tell you something else, is that when we go into a classroom, we are interesting and fun. And you say, well, Heather, what do you mean interesting and fun when you're talking about mental illnesses? But we go in and we change their classroom. So we put up big posters of famous people who've had mental illnesses. So they see, when they walk into their classroom, which is ostensibly their office, right? So we've changed their office. That's a hook to get kids to learn. So we hook them that way, and they go, oh, what's this about? Yeah, I see a picture of Elvis. I see a picture of Judy Garland. I see a picture of Winston Churchill. I see a picture of Demi Lovato. And so they're saying, what do they all have in common? What is this about? So sometimes we will purposely make it funny to talk about some of these issues. We're talking about the brain. We're talking about characteristics. We're talking about the symptoms of some of these disorders. We're not laughing at the disorders. And I tell the kids, it's okay to laugh about some of this, but you can't laugh about suicide. When we talk about suicide, it's not appropriate. And we know you're laughing because you're uncomfortable, but this is one thing we can't laugh about this.
Heather, even with all of the evidence, et cetera, the data that's out there, some parents and friends are still in denial. Why?
Yeah, it's a really good question. There has been tremendous breakthroughs, okay? Like you said, the science is there. We know it. We've actually got pictures of brains, PET scans, positron emission tomography, that shows the difference between a quote-unquote normal brain and one that's affected by a mental health issue. And the brains are different. We can see that these are physical illnesses, and we've actually known it for a while now. But the public needs to have more information. So as much as we teach our kids in the classrooms about the MINDS program, we really need to teach the parents as much as we're teaching the kids. We need to teach everybody in society that mental health issues are common. 1 in 4 people will have a mental health issue at some point in their life. So they affect virtually every family. That they're physical, that they're physical problems in the body, and that they're treatable. And a lot of people don't know it. So the denial that you're talking about stems from a lot of reasons. It could be that they don't want to admit that they have a mental health problem because they don't want to put their business out on Front Street. It used to be an old saying. They don't want people to know their business. They don't think that a mental health professional can help. They don't want to be labeled. Okay, so there's a lot of labels that fly around in society when we're talking about mental illness. It's called stigma. And so there are words like crazy, dumb, stupid, nuts, retarded, and people don't want to be called those things. The stigma is an important aspect that we touch on in the program to teach people that those words don't work when you're talking about people with mental illnesses. It's not even appropriate. They're not true.
Heather, if a listener has a loved one that they think may have a mental illness, what can and what should he or she do?
Yeah. First of all, there's a couple of things. First of all, if you're a parent and you think that your child might be suffering from a mental health problem, go on our website, www.mindsprogram.org, and we've got a list of symptoms on there, or you can go to other mental health websites. Look at the symptoms of depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, addiction, and talk to your child about these issues. And or suicide prevention. It's okay to ask your child, it's okay to ask anybody. If you see that your loved one is having a really hard time with life, and come on, that happens to all of us at times, we all have those moments, that you want to ask them, are you thinking of hurting yourself? Are you thinking of suicide? Because then you give them the opportunity to give you a true answer. If you need help, there are places to get help. So if it's an addiction problem, Alcoholics Anonymous is free. Narcotics Anonymous is free. You can go to a psychologist, a psychiatrist. If this is a problem that is happening right now, you can go to the emergency room. And actually, that is our de facto mental health treatment right now. If you've got an emergency mental health issue, is the emergency room.
You say that there are two ways to treat mental illness: talk therapy and medication therapy.
Right. And so people don't realize that, well, first of all, talk therapy is what everyone's used to. Talk therapy is going to see a therapist, going to see a psychologist, and talking about your issues. Now, there's a lot of different kinds of talk therapy. And a lot of people remember Freudian therapy. There's humanistic therapy, there's family therapy, there's lots of different kinds of therapy. So talk to your therapist. Interview therapists. That's an idea that people need to start working and getting into their thinking, is interview the therapist. If you don't like your therapist, if you don't trust your therapist, it's not going to work. You have to have a bond there that you believe that therapist is going to help you. That could be a counselor. It could be a social worker. It could also be your faith-based leader to help with issues like this. Medication therapy is different. That's a psychiatrist who's going to deal with medication.
If there's a listener that says, If I'm honest, I have a family member with a mental illness, and I am embarrassed by this.
Well, I would say I understand, but let me tell you that if you're, switch it out with any other illness. So if you said, I have a family member with cancer, and I'm really embarrassed by this, we wouldn't do that. That's the stigma that I was talking about. What you're saying is that's the stigma they're feeling of, I don't want to, you know, yeah, they do some weird things sometimes, and maybe that's embarrassing. But you have to understand that these are real illnesses that the people cannot help. If they're untreated or undiagnosed, they cannot help doing the things that they're doing. So learn up on it. Get some information.
A week from tonight, Heather, the Super Bowl.
Yes.
$3 million, I think, a minute.
Right.
Somebody gives you 1 minute to talk during the Super Bowl on shining a light on mental health. What do you say?
I would say 1 in 4 people suffer from this illness. These are treatable illnesses. What are we talking about? We're talking about your brain. These are mental health issues, and they're nothing to be ashamed of. We've got help, and it's okay to ask for help. We don't want to lose anybody, and we can lose people a lot of different ways. We can lose them to suicide, and you can lose your life by having an untreated illness. So come with us. Start the journey with the Minds program and learn how you can be an ambassador to help end the stigma and know that it's okay to get help for these very treatable illnesses.
Heather, for 20 years, you had a fairy tale life. You know, great hotels in major cities. You're around beautiful people, great places, clothing, diamonds, jewelry, you know, new cars. And now your ministry is, some would say, the dark side. Are you okay with this life?
Oh, my gosh. I'm the luckiest woman. I'm the luckiest woman in the world that gets to do this. And because, Jack, when you look at a 14-year-old who comes to you after a presentation in their classroom and says, I was going to kill myself last night, but my sister stopped me. But because of this program, you've let me know that there's help available. Will you help me get help? And we do have protocol in place, strict protocol, and we do get that child help. And then we see them the next semester, and they come back and say, because of your program, I didn't kill myself. That is absolutely amazing. And I'm the lucky one that I get to tell kids the good news that there's help available.
We're talking to Heather Irish. When we come back, we'll ask her about the silent epidemic, suicide. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Heather Irish, founder and president, Minds Program, Inc., www.mindsprogram.org. Suicide, some facts. Each day in our nation, there are an average of over 5,400 suicide attempts by young people grades 7 through 12. We lose approximately 100 young people each week to this tragedy. 4 out of 5 teens who attempt suicide have given clear warning signs. Talk to us about suicide.
Jack, I think that a lot of your listeners are going to be surprised at those statistics that you just said, and they shouldn't be. So, suicide is a real problem. And it's not just a problem for teenagers. Those were statistics for teenagers. It's actually a problem across the board. Our highest rate of suicide, completed suicide, is white men over the age of 50. That's the group that commits the highest rate of suicide. But the area that we deal with is with teenagers. So here's what we know. We know that It is a national epidemic. And thank goodness, but our government just came out about a year ago, less than a year ago, Kathleen Sebelius came out, Health and Human Services Secretary, with a national program to prevent suicide. That's never happened before, ever, in our country. So we now have a national program to prevent suicide. And of course, we're doing all the things that are on that list. There's, I believe, five points that they want people to do. And we've been doing it for 16 years. But it's great news for us because we want the nation to understand that this is a real problem. Now, will everybody who has a mental illness commit suicide? No. Will everyone who has a mental illness think about committing suicide? No. But the majority of people who attempt suicide are suffering from a mental health problem. So if we can back it up and teach people to get help before they have a mental health problem, we'll save lives.
Heather, what signs should a parent look for?
One of the things you want to look for, as parents, you know your child better than anybody else does. So if you see changes in their behavior, so let's say they used to like to play basketball and they used to hang out with a good group of kids who used to play basketball and do all their homework, and all of a sudden you see your child not wanting to hang out with them anymore, isolating in their room, or changing groups and hanging out with a group that looks a little more ominous. They look like maybe these are kids who might be getting into trouble. And you may not be able to see this at all, but you're seeing a change in the group that they're hanging out with, seeing a change in their behavior, dropping of grades. That's a big sign that the grades are dropping, that something's going on with that child. Skipping school. We know that most kids that skip school are suffering from a mental health problem. Doing drugs and alcohol could be a sign that drugs and alcohol can also trigger suicide thoughts in people who are drinking and drugging. Could also be self-medication for somebody who has depression. Giving away their prized possessions, okay, for no reason at all. That's a sign of suicide. Writing about death, talking about death, talking about not wanting to live anymore, and especially on social media, we're seeing a huge jump in kids writing on social media that they don't want to live anymore, that they want to end their life.
There was a doctor at Beaumont for decades, Dr. Robert Poole, Bob Poole, phenomenal human being, and world-class plastic surgeon. And he would always say that we do the cutting, but God does the healing. What role does prayer play in this?
I think that what we need to tell people is that just like any illness or anything that is a issue, problem in your life, you're going to use all your resources. Gather all your resources. You're going to use your family for support. You're going to use your faith for support. But you're also going to use the doctors. So don't rule out, don't take your faith out of this at all. But understand that when there are medical issues, that you can use prayer and use your doctors, that they work well together.
If there's a listener who's 60, you know, has been out of work for a year, a lot of life insurance, doesn't have much hope, kids' issues, etc., and he's thinking of ending his life, Heather, what do you say to that person?
Oh, I wish I could look that person in their eyes and say, please don't leave. Please, please don't leave. We need you here. There are people who need you and love you and care about you. And maybe you can't see it right now, and maybe you can't feel it right now. But you are important, and you're important here. And so we need you to hold on. We don't want to lose one more person.
Likewise, we are losing 22 of our bravest young veterans coming back from Afghanistan or came back from Iraq. 22 a day. What do you say to them?
You know, I'd say the same thing. But I would also say we need to get you to a psychiatrist, and we need to get you help so that you can start feeling better, because this is an illness. Now, I need to tell something to your listeners also. People who are thinking of suicide or attempting or completing suicide usually don't want to die, Jack. They want the pain to stop. The pain is so great that they want the pain to stop. I have talked to women who have suffered from depression, who and who have given birth, and they said depression hurt so much more than childbirth would ever even come close to hurting. It, childbirth doesn't come as close to depression and how much pain it caused. So they want the pain to stop.
We're talking to Heather Irish. Heather, you can live without food for 30 days. You can live without water for 7 days. But you can't live without hope for a minute. Talk to us about hope.
Yeah. It seems so ominous. It's almost like it can slip through your fingers. And everybody's different. This is the hard part. This is where it gets into, it depends on who that person is. And that's why some people use talk therapy to get better, and some people use medication therapy. And some people use both. I want your listeners to know that not everybody uses medication, but some people do. And for some people, that is what helps them to have a good life and to have hope. And so it's going to be different for everybody as to how they get their hope, but they need to feel that they are part of society and that, you know, treatment is the first way to start.
You say you're an advocate.
Right.
And a fabulous advocate for
Thank
mental
you.
Health. What do you hope to accomplish in the next year or two?
Oh, this is so exciting, Jack, because after that horrible tragedy of Sandy Hook that happened at that school, I started getting calls specifically from around the world. People wanted to ask me, how could Sandy Hook have happened? What happened? Heather, what do we do? What do we need to do to fix this? And that's when we decided that we need to have videos that we can promote to our schools so that they can have the answers on mental health education. And so we're making videos to sell to the schools.
Heather, as our time winds down this evening, what advice would you give to our young listeners?
That you have your whole life in front of you, and it may seem dark right now, but it's going to change. Suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary situation, and you've got to remember, life changes on a dime, and it's okay to ask for help for these issues. Everybody needs help now and then. It's not a sign of weakness. It is a sign of strength to say, nobody's good at everything. So when you need help, ask for help.
Heather Irish, thanks much for all you do. Please keep shining the light on mental health.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasul. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.